Ross Lazaru Hood.
Yes, indeed.
Tell me about your name.
Ah, that's quite an easy one. Well, Hood, Northern Irish, originally from Denmark, Odo. And Lazaru is my wife's. So it's Malaysian, Portuguese in origin, with an extra O in the end to make it Malaysian. And basically, we decided to take the surname and double borrow it, not to be posh. But with my father-in-law, the Dean would die within his kids. So I just said, let's jump in, let's do a bit of double borrow. That means it can continue on. And now with three sons, it's definitely continuing on in some way and manner.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And so what's that conversation like where you have to decide what surname goes first?
It sounded better, Lazaru.
It does, doesn't it?
And honestly,
it sounds Lazaru. Badass. Like, I've been saying to people, yeah, I've got this guy, Ross Lazaru, who come in, and they're like, who? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's intriguing. It's very nice.
No, it is nice. And it does make a bit of an interest instead of like the Robin Hood end to it. Mm. It is the Lazaru Hood. And, you know, it does have that multicultural from Denmark, where it originally came from, to Northern Ireland with all the amazing things across the island of Ireland, to Malaysia and all the combination of Indian, Chinese, Malay and all the other Asian and Portuguese history to it as well. It's fantastic.
Class. Mr. Daniel?
Yeah, it was the same case for me as well. Whenever he told me like, oh yeah, I was looking through the calendars for the next podcast episodes and I saw your episode coming up here and I was like, Matthew, who is this? Who is this? Because from the seams of things, like I can tell him instantly this is going to be a really good episode. And I was like, who is this?
You can only hope for that now.
Who is?
Well, so far, so good. What are we? We're 1 minute, 30 seconds in. So we're doing yeah. We're doing pretty good so far. So you grew up in Larne.
I did.
In an estate. You have since gone around the world, done all sorts of crazy things, including picking up an extra surname, which is pretty cool. And you somehow have the freedom to the city of London?
Yeah.
Is that like a key or like... How does that work?
Yeah, so
do people talk about the key to the city? Is that what that is?
Well, it isn't the key to the city to a degree. It's basically I was asked, you know, everything I've been doing in the city through Landmark, my charity and stuff, and other little bits and pieces, that would I be happy to be awarded the Freedom of the City of London? Of course, you're going to ask that. What does that get? And first of all, he says you can march sheep over the Tower of London.
Good.
And the bridge. I haven't done that yet. I'm looking forward to doing that. Might do it for my 50th. And then back in the day, you had a little pocket that if you were out drinking, for example, you were allowed to, no fines, walk away, and you got some deals through trading. But it's all about the trade of the City of London, because some people get mixed up between the Mayor of London and basically you've got the City Mayor of London, and then you've obviously got the other one. And for us wise, it just gives you a kind of gratitude to the work you've done for business throughout London, realistically. And as you say, for me, it's been leaving a little Secourt estate. I'm highly proud to come from Larne and especially from Secourt, and so many people have, to kind of go around the world.
This episode is part of our ongoing series with NI Connections, where we interview an interesting person from Northern Ireland who's living and/or working overseas. Now, who are NI Connections? They are the diaspora department of InvestNI, and their mission is really, really simple. It's to connect the Northern Irish community all around the world. They put together some really incredible resources, including how to move you and your family back home if you have been living overseas, how to move to Northern Ireland for the first time, and even how to move your business or open up a new branch in this wonderful place that we call home. You'll also can find hundreds of interviews and profiles with fascinating people who are proud to call this place home. And you can check out all of these things and sign up for their free email newsletter at niconnections.com. Thanks very much. And I hope you enjoy the rest of today's episode.
So what got you out of Northern Ireland?
Escape. Basically, I was doing a Queen's University architectural degree that I did 3 weeks. Very proud of that. Did 2 weeks of freshers, 1 week of actual course. And I was trying to get my head around an 8-year course. And I just couldn't get my head around it. Because coming from a council estate, not much cash, great mum who looked after me, you still want to do something more. So I'd done a summer session on Stenaline, rang them up and said, can I defer and come work for you for a year to get my head around? Which I did. And I did 4 A-levels You did a week on the ship, you're doing a week off. And I did 4 A-levels, came back to my architectural degree, did 2 weeks. Very proud of that now. Did 1 week of fresher, 1 week of course, and I went, I'm out. I just can't get my head around it. And I rang up Norwich Uni, and I said, would I be able to come and do, well, it's business management with insurance. And they said, leave it with us. I said, obviously, I have to wait a year. UCAS defers you. And within, what, 3 hours, something like that, they rang up and says, you're here in 10 days.
Unreal.
And I can't believe they're able to transfer my grant, do whatever through UCAS. And then I did a 4-year course and have been in London for, guts of 30 years.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's been great. It has been great.
And so you go from architecture to business management with insurance. That's a bit niche.
It's, well, you do that research of going, you've got more chance to go out and do something with business management. And when you look at London, Lawyers of London, you've got a great chance to be an entrepreneur within each business segment. But also you have this here massive chance to do global insurance and earn a reasonably good salary. Mm-hmm. So jumped in, started in claims, a junior claims broker. Marching in every day with my slip case, broking businesses' claims. And it was great. Learned my trade. You learned your wordings as you were before going in. You sat across from a claims underwriter, justified this claim. They said, yes, we'll pay this, or we'll put such and such a lawyer or loss adjuster on, which then moved into broking, underwriting, and it became a syndicate class underwriter. So basically that means is that you're the head of a manager of a, well, for me, professional indemnity department. Did okay. Grew an account from 4 million to 60 mil in 3 years with no claims, which is, people are still nodding their head going, how did that happen? But it was just the time. And much as I can say, it was my amazing underwriting and my team's, it was the right time, benign claim situation. And I was going to offer a job in Singapore. And my mentor at the time said, don't be silly. Stay, start up your own business, do an MGA, managing general agent, which is like an insurance intermediary. And I said, okay, that'd be easy, wouldn't it? And I've said to you before, is that it was 18 months of building a brand with no money coming in. And it was getting down to the coppers with my wife pregnant with the twins, new house. And an application for Waterstones sitting there going, might be an idea of this lovely company with nothing coming in. But within a month, it happened. We got our first binder, which meant we were able to underwrite on behalf of somebody. And now, 6 years later, we've done okay on Landmark. So, yeah.
I would say so. Talk to me about those 18 months. And particularly as you start kind of getting, you know, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3.
Right. Okay. It was, excuse the pun, squidgy bum time.
Yeah.
So it was a situation of, you know, the original logo for Landmark was a ladybird, and there was loads of different type of fonts and stuff. There was the panic of setting a company up, where we're going to be based, virtual based or whatever. How's the team going to work? It's going to be me initially. To the logo change into the stag, which is on everything I do now. I think it's kind of a good luck emblem for me. And it just made sense for me to bring other people in. And also you had to consider the weirdness of the investment going into virtual offices. So it was going into the WeWork style and meeting people and convincing people that I could do what I was doing previously and backing me. Mm. And then saying, well, I could hire someone to do that. Well, you do, but you're going to have to pay XYZ for them, the lights behind you and the office, the furniture, sick pay. You just pay me, give me a commission, and I'll underwrite. And, but yeah, it was literally waiting for the contract, having whatever it was, 1 month left of the mortgage payments left before the credit cards were going to be used. And they signed and they believed in us. And in the first year of Landmark, we did enough to be able to have our own office, to have staff coming in. We were very lucky that a lawyer friend, they allowed us to come in and have a banker desk for free. And I John Caton, he was amazing. Really great man who gave us 2 years of letting us sit in a bank of desks. And then we were able to pay people's salaries. And at the end of the 2 years, we were able to move out, renovate an HMV in the middle of Leadenhall Market, bang, right beside Lloyd's of London, and gave the brokers a chance to go, right, we're only a hot skip and a jump, no elevators to go into, come in and broke to us. We had a wee coffee shop in the front. And ever since, it's been great.
Class. Why is the stag important to you?
Well, the stag to me, I think it's a beautiful animal, but it's also, it's the king of the forest. Not many people know that. We've got, you know, the lion is obviously the king of the jungle, but the stag's the king of the forest, and also the stag look after other animals. So to me, it was all about the fact you're looking after your customers, your clients, but also you were helping people. So if you look at from the Landmark logo all the way through to one of our logos under the Clear Group is Slayer. There's the stag there, and under the Clear Group as well, there's the stag. And it just gives a solidarity to helping people. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the RISA Foundation, my charity, and I co-found it with my business partner, it's there as well. And it just shows that we want to be able to help people in whatever way or what we're doing too. Mm-hmm.
The idea of being king of the forest could be interpreted a different way. Some people think that being a king means you can do whatever you want and take whatever you want. I like how you flip that on its head, and actually the position of leadership and influence is about service. Where does that come from in your life?
Well, my mum, she worked in a shop for a number of years, and you know, she was out, you know, helping other people, but at the same time helping us and my three brothers. So I knew what my mum went through, and there's times that she went without for us to have some food or, you know, school uniform and stuff. So I had it early doors about helping people, seeing what my mum went through. And I always had that humbleness in the fact of protecting, helping people. So that's always been through everything I've done and everything I try to do, and from building teams. I'd probably say I've got better at delegation. I've got better of not putting them people on the same pedestal as me. It took quite a few number of years. But now it is literally saying to people, here's a autonomy, here's a big table. You go and do what you want, but just remember about communication. Just remember about asking. Don't try and hide. Don't think that the smallest thing, but giving people that platform. I love it. And one thing we did was initiation of me, goodness, about a year or so ago, I made the decision that within Clearer, I didn't want to have the decision of going, anybody join us had to have a university degree. Mm-hmm. They can. And you have some amazing people who've got university degrees, but you've got people who want to leave high school and go, I don't want to go down that education route, but I think I'm great, or I could learn to be great. So anybody who joins Clear doesn't have to have a degree. And again, it is just bringing that emphasis that you said about helping people and giving them the opportunity to thrive and grow.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm all about.
I think it's been only the last couple of years in my life that I've realized that business can actually be an amazing vehicle to bring about change. And that could be change on a personal level. So you could transform someone's character, you could transform somebody's life that you work with. What your business actually does, the output of that business, could also impact society. And I don't know if it's a Northern Irish thing or if it's just a mathy thing, but we kind of spoke off air. I always thought that there was only one way to do that, and that was, you know, charity, non-profit, volunteering, you know, being out there, you know, working with someone who maybe doesn't have somewhere to live or something like that. Could you maybe walk us through a little bit deeper that mindset that you have about how business can impact society at large?
Absolutely. I suppose the easiest one for kind of pump through is that you've got the Clear Group, you've got the fact of the environmental, the sustainability. Obviously, within Clear, we do 80% of the glass, and we make sure that we kind of have that recyclable. So straight away, you're on the environmental side. We're pushing to be 100% carbon neutral within the next few years. So you're bringing in solar and stuff. So that kind of goes in the wider society that we're trying to do. Also with electric vehicles and stuff, we'll be bringing in the next wee while. Then you have the people. And that's our main message that I bought into when we acquired Clear 18 months ago. And it's the fact that you're able to help those with mixed abilities. So those who are disabled, neurodiversity, ADHD, dyslexia, like me, and able to show them that you can have, some people in society call it an issue. You go, what's a superpower? Whatever you have can be directed, but you have to sit down and go, right, where's your strengths? Like a SWOT analysis to the degree we do back in school. But it is sitting down and going, right, but what are you good at? Don't hide it. Tell us. You're amazing at detail. Right, cool. Like, let's do the labels. Is there a mistake in that? Okay, go into the clean room and do that side. Are you good at organizing? Brilliant. Okay, can you organize the people and stuff? So there's always a success. There's always a chance for somebody to kind of bring something through. And I suppose that's what we're all about. And I've been able to do it more and clearer than I was at Landmark within that business thing. And I suppose I was now kind of did quite successful with Landmark. I've been able to do a bit more different on the clearer side. Also bringing a message out to people and talking about diversity, talking about environmental, talking about water, hydration, health, mental health. And again, that brings a lot of people to the forefront because there's a lot of hidden mental health. There's a lot of stuff that you put yourself under pressure, both in regard to all people in society. And what we try to do is really sing about it. I'm not trying to rub it down people's noses and all the rest of it, but it's just kind of highlighting it while we keep talking about the amazing message of the clear products, and they taste fantastic. So I suppose it's just giving a platform to people to succeed.
Did you ever run into anything in your Northern Irishisms? We have this thing about success where it's like success is almost like a bad thing. And people who succeed and people who make money and people who, you know, make something out of their lives are almost like criminals. I don't know what that is exactly. And I've been trying to figure that out for 350 episodes. But do you have any insight into that?
I think it's, I suppose it's coming from, yes is the answer before I go into detail. But it would be, I think from working in the city to coming back home, there are a number of people and great hearts and great people out there who are happy for you, especially people from home. I find that a lot. There's a lot of people in Northern Ireland who are really happy for you to succeed it, and especially that you do something with it to help people. But there's a lot of green-eyed monsters. There are a lot of people who would like to see you fail.
Right.
Because, again, not putting everybody on a pedestal here for that, but you've got a situation where maybe they haven't got the guts to go out, cut the ties, as I keep saying, the hamster wheel, and there's no paycheck. There's no that monthly envelope that you open thinking it's going to be different, but you still open it every single month. But even I did that.
Maybe this time they made a mistake and added an extra zero. Come
which
on,
I'm never going to pay back. Yeah, but it is that. And you get a lot of people who are happy to sit there. And I suppose like the football, I could do better. You know, get out there and do this. And it is the same going that if you got your own business, it's like, why is he doing that? Or why is she doing that? And you go, well, I'm looking after like Landmark. We've got over 50 people who are dependent on us as co-founders, co-owners and stuff to provide their salaries for their mortgages and stuff like that, making sure the lights stay on, the bills are paid, looking at a vision and strategy. And it isn't just about your daily employment. So to have that leap of faith in yourself to get out and build a business, but to sit and look at those people to go, what are you doing that for? I could do that better. And my call is, do it.
Right.
If you really think, get out, I resign, I will go out and product. Don't sit and just be like a backseat driver and try and critique. Build people up. And that's what it cracks me up, is they're about going, either you don't know the person, really. Do you go out and have a cup of coffee or a beer with them? No. So you don't really know them. You don't know what's happening behind the closed doors at home and the stresses from the business. Actually, champion them and go, that's great, they're out. They're actually helping other people get into jobs. They're helping them survive and also provide for their families or build up to become a family or just enjoy some holidays and new trainers and stuff. But it is that I don't get the people out there who are almost knocking entrepreneurs or both those people wanting to succeed, and maybe it's a promotion or whatever, and going, well done. Mm-hmm. You worked hard for that.
Yeah.
And I suppose I get a little bit of the, even the imposter syndrome comes in for me on it, but I can look back and go, we've been able to hire and bring 50 people into Landmark. We've got an excess of nearly 20, coming up 20 people within the Clear group already, when it was about 8 people. Mm-hmm. And we're been able to grow and make people's lives slightly different, but have a family within our community of each of the businesses. So I suppose I say to anybody out there, champion people who are taking a chance and maybe get on board the train with them or get on your own train and take a chance on your own self. But if you're not willing to, champion other people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Brilliant. So I would have the opinion that for people who aren't in the arena, to quote that kind of Teddy Roosevelt thing, people who aren't actually actively engaged in the game, whether the game's entrepreneurship or football or whatever it is, their opinions don't matter for me. Whose criticism would you listen to? If someone came to you and said, here, look, Ross, you know, on the pull you aside and they say something to you, whose opinion are you really, really going to be like, okay, I really need to open my eyes and pay attention to this?
Everybody. I'm not going to lie to you. It's from even my own son, one of them, have turned around and said he didn't like something what I was doing with it in work. And then, okay, you kind of get a double look and you go, you're like, you're 6 years of age.
All right, chairman.
You're trying to be the next CEO here? There's not time for me to retire yet. And I actually had to go, well, they've got an input. Mm-hmm. And even up to, you know, one of our mutual friends, Jerry White, when we first brought out Clear Twist, we did a soft launch in Belfast. And the bottles and the labels looked, as far as we were concerned, amazing. And we took X number of months to kind of work it out. And I remember Jerry saying, so you do this at home? Oh, he tore us to pieces on it. And he goes, but very politely. It was the first time meeting Jerry. And but he did it out of kindness. And of course, we're kind of going, well, I kind of like it. But after that, we sat down, we kind of looked towards other market peers, bottles, and okay, maybe it isn't premium. Mm. And we literally spent the next 5 weeks, we actually changed the bottle, the labels, and now as far as we're concerned, it sits there and it sits in comparison. And even to the point where we've got, you know, critique from my mum to my wife, who's my soundboard on many things, and she doesn't hold back sometimes with it, and I need that. So I suppose anybody on the street as well, we get messages on our social media of saying, you know, you need to tweak this or do that, or can you bring that out? And it's good to take out and have a little bit of critique and listen to the whole part. There may be only a small bit you take away, but it is listening. But also with those messages, it's going back and thinking them. So I do that as well. I take that, you know, 2 seconds just to go, thanks for that input. I'll take it away from us. And anything else, come back to us. Mm-hmm. So you never know. You do have the negative one. You can't knock those ones. And they're just looking for a dig. Mm-hmm. As we would say, and might not take most of those ones, but I do take the heart though that they want to have a wee jab in at the same time.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with those ones?
Ignore them. Yeah, you got my mum calls me a joke with a jag in it, and you do get a backhanded compliment or something like that, and you have to ignore. You have to put it behind you,
right,
and strive forward to those people, and you can't. You can't make everybody jump on your train. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you have to go. They might come down the line. Just keep chugging on and push forward with the people who are there, who are actually positively trying to help. Mm-hmm. And that little bit of critique is great because it makes sure you're going to grow and you're going to actually see something that you maybe have missed. Because I think one thing you know, you got a lot of companies bringing in consultants and they tell you something that you already knew. That's what the general public and that's what your family, friends, colleagues are doing.
Yeah.
Because you're in a tunnel going, I'm amazing and my product's fantastic and what I'm doing is great and I'm centered on it. But sometimes you're peripheral and you're forgetting about some stuff over in the edges that can make it even better. And I think that's what the other people are doing.
Mm.
I think so.
Really interesting. Like that idea of putting it behind you.
Yeah, I think you have to put it behind you because otherwise the stresses, the mental stresses, the little white mice in your head sometimes niggling you going, I hate that person. And you basically, you have to go, let them have their opinion.
Yeah.
Because realistically, it's not making any real impact. When you close your door at night, you've got your family, your kids, or you've got your Netflix and your delivery. You know, it doesn't matter because that person or people have no impact in your real life.
Mm-hmm.
So don't let the anxiousness, don't let the grit pull you. Just go, well, fair dues. Mm-hmm. Let them have that opinion and tear on.
Are there any parts of yourself that you've had to put behind you on this journey?
Parts of me. Not wearing a shirt and tie all the time. I've been used to wearing a shirt and tie from school. As I call it, I put my school uniform when I went into the city. That's definitely one of them. Because when you work in Lloyd's of London, when I did, you had to wear your suit jacket and tie and you weren't allowed to trade unless that was on. You couldn't take your jacket off on a hot day, put over your seat. The ushers, the Lloyd's of London ushers used to come up and tap you on the shoulder and go, sir, would you get dressed, please? And you put it on.
Hardcore?
No, don't. It was crazy, especially in the hot days. It was really hot. And it was, if you did it again, I think it was like a 3-strike rule, if I remember right. I never got this, but you were suspended from training. You had to go back to the office. Someone's got a rap on the knuckles from being at school. So I suppose for me, it was being able to relax and be able to wear my civvies and kind of go, oh, I don't need to wear my suit anymore. Appropriate in some meetings and some clients. So that's definitely one of them. And again, I think I said earlier, it's delegation. It is trusting the smarter people in the room and surrounding yourself with those people because you're definitely not the smartest person and they're not going to be able to help. So I suppose for me, it is taking a trust in other people. So yeah, I think that would probably be for me.
Was there any element of the suit kind of felt like a little bit like a work identity? Because I've definitely felt that before where it's like, okay, I'm now putting my uniform on. I'm in that mindset. It's like the superhero costume. Do you know what I mean? Right. It's like the cape almost.
Yeah, it is. And also it's easier to not have to buy so many stuff.
Yeah, true.
And a tick, wearing your suit and all you do is pick a tie out or a shirt or a pair of socks. But really each day when we got into the office, it took a lot of pressure off you. You knew what you were wearing, maybe a grey suit or a blue suit or a black. There's not many other ones you're able to wear through. So yeah, it was putting a superhero outfit on, but it took a lot of pressure off you. And now you're having to think, who am I meeting? Am I wearing a blazer, a shirt, a jumper, a pair of jeans? There's a lot more to think about.
Yeah, a lot more variables, man.
Yeah, it's probably a bit more pressure now. I think I'll go back to a suit.
Just make a shorts and t-shirt year-round, flip-flops, and just say, look, I'm committed.
This is me.
Doesn't matter if it's Richard Branson. I don't care who it is. Although he would actually probably appreciate that.
As long as I'm out in Nectar Island, I'd be quite happy with it. I'm quite a relaxed person these days. It's been, I probably was a bean. I resigned as group CEO of Landmark and I, 2 years ago, and it's taken me 2 years to be able to more relax them on what I'm wearing. And I obviously from the COVID to now, it's the working from home.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that's another thing for me is doing a lot of meetings, working from home, sometimes the city, sometime in Northern Ireland. I don't believe in an office. Mm-hmm. I don't want an office in the house. I stick all my books in that.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I sit with my kids running around the living room. And if you're ever in a meeting with me on Zoom or Teams, you maybe have one of my boys jumping my shoulders, shouting for something. And I'd rather have it real.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the earbuds in, you're canceling some noise out from you're probably seeing my face, and beyond that, it's up in chaos, to be honest with you. You could make I forget the name of the song from Pink, and I think it's Run, is it? Where a guy's singing in a bar and it's going just to chaos. That sometimes is happening in front of any team calling down. But I like to be in the middle of my kids. Yeah. And they mean so much to me. And I don't want them thinking their papa is in the middle of, you know, an office locked away from them. They actually see me working, and also instills them a working attitude too. So, yeah. It's
interesting. Yeah, I heard something the other day. It says, in regards to your kids, more is caught than taught.
Hard is. Go ahead.
And so it's interesting that you are exposing your kids, even just like how you conduct meetings, how you do deals, how you talk with people, blah, 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 blah. What's it been like to integrate kind of more of the personal side of Ross with the business side of Ross? Like, what's it been like amalgamating these two bits together?
Well, basically being honest.
yeah, I guess that's one way to put it.
Because it's one of those that, you know, everyone's got, you know, probably five personas. You know, you've got the one at home, you've got the one to your clients, you've got the one to your team. Mine's pretty much wrapped up. I decided a few years ago that I wasn't any longer just going to be Ross in the office, Ross at home. I was just going to be me. And either lump it or leave it at that point. And then people really do get me as a heart on a sleeve person. And like I'm saying, if Mateo or Mason or Maddox is kind of jumping on me and I'm going, yes, darling, just stay there for a minute. Yes, we are going to do this deal or whatever it's going to be. People see that I'm a father first, who's trying to do some business at the same point. Or it's the fact of, you know, looking at my phone and maybe my wife saying they're not eating their breakfast. Can you give a video call in 2 seconds? That's real life. And yeah, they need to kind of experience that for me. And then honestly, in the middle of a business, it is saying, I'll shake your hand, that's the deal. But I want you to give it your all and be honest with me. If there's any dance, I don't do it. And I suppose that's the other thing. Before, you would just smile and you kind of go, okay, we'll get back to you. Now it's, I'm literally, I cut through all the red tape and go, if I like something, let's do it. Let's work out the paperwork later, but let's do a deal. And I suppose that's one thing, again, of being your own boss compared to being the corporate ladder over here, where you had to go back and get things signed off. You got to go through your regulatory, your compliance and all that side. You can do that, but let's do a deal. Let's make that happen and make it the easiest route. Let's not play any games. You know, what you want from this, what I want from this, what's your basics? And again, that's me as a person. And I suppose it's one thing is, you know, just be upfront and communicate with me and you'll get me and I'll have your back. And I think that's the difference in the whole thing. I don't do a merry corporate dance anymore. And I love it. And it is being your own boss and having the ability, and I get it. Not everyone has that opportunity. But for me, it's, yeah, I love the fact that I can just cut through the red tape corporate stuff.
Yeah. And is that something that you feel like you could have done earlier in your journey? Or do you think that that's something that was only achievable to you once you hit a certain level?
Yes, is the answer.
Yeah, okay.
If anybody in the city, you know, you ever spoke to about myself, I always said I just want to be a good number two. And I never even thought about, you know, being, you know, the head honcho. I never thought about even owning my own business. Never, wasn't the guy. And it was just that mentor, and his name's Piers Wigan. And he was the one saying, no, stay, you know, you can do this here and let's get on with it. And I suppose it's, yes, and even in your career, you get each position, you get more responsibility to be able to do what you want. But I think it takes a leader to allow these junior guys to be able to also take a chance. And that's something that I give full autonomy within all the guys I work with now, going, what do you think? Jump on it. you know, give him an expense card. Mm-hmm. Just tear on. And, you know, we've got a great guy who is the head of our plant, William McCauley, and I love him to pieces. And he runs Clearwater in Macromorne. And, you know, he'll say, are you okay, we get this X for the guys, Terrell? And he loves the full team. And that team is, yeah, it's my heart. I love the fellas and the ladies and everything who works, you know, within Clearwater. But William has full autonomy for us to get on with. And I think you need to empower people instead of having to wait for them to get up here to make the decision that they go, I could have did that. Mm-hmm. And even just sitting down and listening and taking their ideas. But to me, don't let the leader take the credit. Take that person and go, you jump in front of the boss. You take the credit for that and let's see where else you can go for. Mm. Or somebody said to me, an old boss, basically, my job is to make you to the person I am, and it's for me to make me go for the next level. Mm-hmm. And it's not about me worrying about you taking my job.
Right.
And that stuck with me all the way through. So I think you have to be able to self-aware grow. And that's something that I've taken from 2011, where I was told that. Is that, and my boss was great. He was always looking to his next level of his career. And he was always saying to me, go for it. I'll put you in front of the CEO and you can come up with some ideas. And that helped my, I suppose, that was the flick of maybe me one day owning a business. Mm. But I was petrified of starting my own business. And I was petrified of the fact of going to my wife and going, would you mind us not having any cash coming in? But you know, she was great. She was there from the first day. She's going, what name are we going to call it? And that was the landmark. And you know, she put money in. We sold her flat in Shrewsbury when we were getting desperate for cash. And it was the fact that she goes, right, I believe in you. Hmm. That was just a blessing. And now I can give her the rewards of where we are at this point. But it is just a leap of faith and belief.
Sure. Well, she was an angel investor with a good return on investment is what I'm hearing you say.
She's a very strict boss, to be honest with you. No, not really. No, she was great. She literally, exactly the same as what we were just talking about. She went, you believe in it, I believe in it. Get on with it. Mm. And sometimes she does say, yeah, you're the best investment I ever had. And I go,
love that.
That was going through.
So when we think about Northern Ireland, how's your perspective on home changed over the years?
First comment, I've fallen madly in love with my home country. And it's, I just can't get over of what the Northern Irish people are now doing, seen around the world, and rightfully so, and that should have been earlier. But for me, I remember saying to you earlier on that I went and did university, I went and did the corporate life, forgot about home, forgot about my people. And then you probably can blame my childhood mate, Kenny Bruce, to be honest with you. He got me in to do sponsorship for Larne FC. And I was over home a bit more. I was doing some charity works from setting up my family charity. And as I said, I fell in love again with Larne Town. And I forgot how beautiful it is. And never mind the people, but you've got a stunning Antrim coast. You've got beautiful beaches that have won awards. You've got Maud's ice cream.
Oh, come on. Say it louder.
Oh, don't. Pooh Bear, absolutely stunning. Then
it's Purr Bear now. I think there was a wee bit of a Disney problem there, maybe.
I'm selling Pooh Bear. They can sue me. But I love Honeycomb. But it's, to me wise, that was the bee's knees. And I love now coming home. And I jump and I salute and I champion when I see the likes of Claire Taggart, number one boccia champion, to Rory McIlroy winning and flying the flag from home. Jamie Doran having his accent on movies and TV series, when before you only had the likes of Sean Connery being able to do a Russian with a Scottish accent. Don't get it, but we all bought into it. But our accent and our people are now thriving globally. You've got from the Dead Rabbit out in New York, and you know those guys are flying the flag of Northern Irish hospitality, produce, and I think that's glorious. Then you've got, you know, literary agents. You've got somebody I went to school with, Angela King, now Dr. Angela King, and she's a novelist shouting about our history of Ulster Scots and Irishness as well. And I think that's cracker. So you've got the mystical lands created by Narnia and C.S. Lewis. People probably don't even realise he's from Northern Ireland, or was, to Bram Stoker. Dracula, he was created in the island of Ireland. And I think when you've got all these literary geniuses to the new and modern ones, to the sporting stars, you can't beat it. And one of the things I say, you've got, I took an Irishman to bring surfing back to Hawaii, and not many people know it. And you go, no, you know, you're talking waffle. It's the Hawaiians. It's at least, nope, it was a Northern Irishman. He was, who brought back the skill of surfing. And when you look through the past, people just said it was, you might have an Irish bar in Australia to Bangkok. That was what we were known for. Mm-hmm. Now we're looking at gastronomy from Michael Dean to, it was Roscoe's back in the day, to everyone. So that, I think it's amazing what we've achieved. And I've fallen madly in love with my country. And I might convince my wife to move back at some point. And Janice will probably watch this and go, I'm going to really have a word with you at some point.
You'll be getting a phone call or a knock on the door from the boss, I think. I think so.
She might ask you to edit some things.
Yeah. It's like, can you like remove things? Like after things have already gone up, it's like, Janice, yes, whatever you say. What have you enjoyed? Is there anything that you've started to do when you come back home? Because you're back, you know, you're back and forward a good bit now since you acquired Clearer. And I love what you guys are doing over there, by the way. I think it's incredible. But what do you love doing over here that you feel like you can't do somewhere else?
I suppose it's the fact that I can go out for a cup of coffee and catch up with mates. And I suppose it's also, it's having like the, going to the Curran Court and having chicken wings and onion rings. And when they're watching this, they'll go, yeah, he does. That's all I eat. It's chicken wings, onion rings. And I just think it's amazing. It's going to the beaches. It's going through the coast where I grew up and did crabbing. It's seeing the rugged coastline. It's going out in the rain. And what I call it from our family, I don't know if it's Northern Irish or not, but When it's raining, we call it liquid sunshine. So you just get out in it, put your wetproofs on and just get out. What's the difference of being in and out? Have a hot bath and a hot toddy or a cup of tea when you get back to it. So I think that's the bee's knees. One thing you don't get in England, and I'm very grumpy about this, you get the Tato Crisp, you get the Wheaton, although it's called brown soda, don't get that. You get the white soda and the tater bread or tatty bread. You don't get feta.
Yeah.
That makes me grumpy.
Yeah, the Sunblast, if they just got that monopolised, man.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't put it out. Because I have to take almost like drugs and alcohol into my suitcase. I'm bringing loads of loaves of feta back home.
It was funny, we've actually had a conversation, I can't mind who it was with, where we're like, someone needs to talk to Sunblast and get their export game. Like, maybe you're the guy to do it.
I'll just go
that
in.
That could be your greatest gift to Northern Ireland so
I'll
far.
I'll start becoming a distributor for feta as an export. Like, you can get Tato Crisp exported. So maybe I just go, hey, I'll take loads of, you know, the feta and pump it out. But you have to. Now, the argument is, do you toast it? Or do you just not toast it and do you put jam on it?
Well, have you ever put cheese on it?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, with the jam, it's just killer. That's like a granny thing.
Don't care.
See,
love it.
I like toasting it and then just like mountains of butter on it.
But then do you stop though? Like Pringles? Do you stop?
Nah,
you have to eat the whole loaf.
The whole loaf's gone. Yeah. Yeah. I was really into Serene for a while.
Okay.
But I don't know. As I've aged, I just, Vita feels more right than me.
You feel a bit grown up?
Yeah, although in saying that, most people who eat Serene are like 80 years old.
Yeah, you're true. Well, I'm nearly there. I'm only 30 years. But no.
Are you 50?
I'll be 50 in 2 years. So
what age? What age do you think this dude looks?
Don't flirt with me now, Daniel.
Daniel, he's a wee flirt. You need to be careful. Say 21, Daniel.
I was going to say like 25. Honestly.
My wife would be happy.
I would have said like late 30s. Late 30s, early 40s.
You can flirt too anytime. I think that's good. Absolutely. But no, Fida, that is my but Saturday morning,
do,
no
do,
Sunday.
Do you take good care of yourself?
No, definitely. I've got a dad body. And right. I'm very proud of it. No, I fluctuate my weight. I was off, I had cataract surgery not long ago, and I went and had loads of takeaways and I put on way too much weight. And I seen some photographs and videos myself and I went, I'm kind of podge. So I've now got a gym and I'm going out into it, not enough. My wife goes, sit out there. The kids are in bed. TV's there. So do I take care of it? Not enough. And that's in all honesty.
So this is just great genes.
Mom, good mama. I've got to say to that point now. But no, I am on a bit of a health kick at the minute. Drinking more water. I'm also eating moderate.
Right.
Cutting out the carbs a wee bit. Knowing that I need to be around for the boys and also trying to run after them. They're blooming quick. So I suppose that has changed with age, like you just said a minute ago.
Right.
Is, you know, almost 50 and thinking I wouldn't mind being around for a bit longer.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I'm without going into depression, is that one of my brothers, he died at 50.
Mm.
So we're coming up to that. And, you know, it does kind of click and go, maybe cut back in a few things and stuff like that. And maybe take a little bit care on, you know, less of X, Y, and mm-hmm. maybe go out for a run a bit more. And lose the podge. I think that's really...
Mate, I heard something wild a couple of weeks ago from a guy called Dan Sullivan. You ever come across him?
No.
I think you'd like him a lot. He does this thing. I'll literally rip him off, right? I'll just do it right now with you, okay? So like what age would you like to live to?
Oh, I'm greedy. I don't want to die. And, you know, even when if you put me in if I end up in a coma, don't switch me off. I've got a great imagination. I don't want to go anywhere. So no, give me whatever drugs you want to and keep me, you know, pickled. But no, I'm it was, no. You got my granda, he was in his 80s. My mum, I'm not going to say what age she is, she'll beat me up. But a lot of my family are in their get to around about the 80s, mm-hmm. maybe a couple in the 90s. So I suppose I'm on the downward trial if it goes with them. But no, give me as much.
What do you want? Give me a, put a number on it.
Honestly, I wouldn't want to. I love living, and I love seeing everything going on, and I don't get bored of seeing how the world is going and the kids are growing up. I get excited waking up every morning.
Uh-huh.
And why would I want to stop?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm probably a bit of a weird one on that side,
mm-hmm.
but whenever the you know the big guy's time's up for me, I probably won't have any choice out of it. But I definitely wouldn't want to go until I get to see my grandkids,
mm-hmm.
To laugh at my kids and go, that's what it was about, and that's why I was shouting at you all the time. So the quote David Tennant's Doctor Who. I don't want to go.
Yeah.
I think that's really what it came down for me.
That's cool. So, I mean, what I like about that is, so what Dan does is people, you know, they'll pick a number, they'll say,
oh, sorry, Dan.
You know, they'll live till 80 or whatever, okay? And then he asks the question, well, you know, in the last 6 months of your life, how do you want to feel? And they'll say, I want to feel really healthy, I want to feel really, really strong, I want to, you know, want to be able to walk, want to be able to lift this amount of weight, want to be able to do this. And he says, okay, interesting. He says, do you think if you were doing those things that you would die at 80? And I'm like, no. And he says, congratulations, you've just gained another 10, 20 years.
Like that.
And the idea is that actually, if you have in your mind that, oh, I'm going to retire and then, you know, a decade later, I'm going to die, your habits and your actions in your life will start to reflect that, because you're like, I've only got 10 years left. Yeah. I don't need to go to the gym. You know, I'm on my way down anyway. Whereas if you say, I want to live to 120 or something mad like that, yeah, you're like, flip, right, well, I'm 50 now. What I need to start putting in place in my life, and what habits and what things do I start doing, stop doing, that actually gets me all set up so that I can not only reach that goal, but also live as healthy as I possibly can. I like the chat around health span versus lifespan.
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff too. So
I suppose to me, your high span, your health span, so to say, I think it's your positivity span.
Mm.
Because you got to think there's papers out there that those people who go into hospital for whatever go in negatively.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it screws your mind to the point where going, right, I'm going to die. So they actually die.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, you need to have positive vibes on all your aspects. You say, I want to live more. So if you're enjoying life, enjoy it as much. And, you know, I'll give you an example is that my mum there, she went through cancer a few years ago, and she had the house spick and span before going to the hospital for her ops and stuff. You know, the bed linen was done, the house was hoovered, ready that when, you know, the button was turned off, we were able to go in the house and the house was looking great for the funeral and stuff. My eldest brother, Randall, and myself booked her for a big trip to Canada, and he was the one to give it to her, and he goes, well, looks like you're going to have to come out, aren't you? So we guilted my mum
into life
to go into that point. So you are coming back because, you know, we spent money on this. You know, it's our hard earned money.
If you die here, we're going to lose a serious chunk of cash.
How am I supposed to get rid of this? It's under your name.
Do you know how hard it is to change people's names on flights these days?
So, you know, and but we needed to do that for her. And the fact that she's wanted, the fact that she felt guilty about the money more so.
That's hilarious.
But to me, I think a lot of people need to have that positive attitude.
Mm.
And I think that's something that, you know, does gain you. And I know you're saying about the retirement. There was a great doctor. We had a well man thing. It was a freebie we had in the city when I was an employee. And they did it either every year or every 2 years that you went in and you had all the bells and whistles checked for everything, bloods, breath, everything. And they're saying, oh, you need to change this, your high cholesterol here, or you get a little bit of pudge on it, or the heart's doing this or whatever. And her philosophy is those people in the city who were going into retirement, you know, you maybe had a few extra drinks in the city, mm-hmm. as they do. You've got the high power pressure of deals. You had the pressure at home. And then you stopped. And then your body's like, what? It's all a drug, mm-hmm. to a degree. So she came up with a plan for those retiree executives of basically saying that you had to go on the treadmill, get the heart rate up or whatever, gym was going through. Then you had to not stop the drinking. Do it in moderation, because it is a drug to the degree,
mm-hmm.
if you're drinking so much during the executive's lifestyle, and slowly wean down on it. Don't just go, I'm at home and I'm not going to have any. Then it was the fact of having, you know, the few calls, get the heart rate back up again, back on the treadmill. But it was basically going, if you're going to retire, enjoy your time with family, but don't stop and add in. So I suppose, you know, I did something similar when I moved from the corporate life to the business life of Clearer, of, you know, I was very lucky. I spent loads of time with my family and loads of holidays. So that was always there. And I was used to them. Rather, a lot of corporate people never see their families.
Mm.
And it's almost like, who's that coming on holiday with? So that was there, but it was the fact of getting the gym, eating a little bit healthier and going down moderately on my lifestyle, instead of having the steak and chips every day. There was a salad with tuna and stuff, maybe a bit of dressing on that there just for luck. So it was just a change.
Yeah.
And I love that.
It's great. Yeah, I think as long as your future is bigger than your past, you're on the right track.
Yeah, I think so. And it's, yeah, live it. Live your life. And if you're not loving something you're doing, try and change it. Not everyone can do it. But you know, if you can't change what you're doing for work or not, or something, you can't change it at, in the home environment, find something else that you love and have that as your passion. But have a passion. And that's what you wake up for.
Yeah, it is.
It's great. Like, I'm obviously going down the route of, I don't know if I'll retire. Probably not, knowing me. And again, my wife would like me to retire. But, you know, I've kind of taken up new interests. Of, you know, I bought a banjo and a boring drum, and that's something I'm learning at the minute. And it's just keeping the peaks of me because I'm useless at languages. I don't even think about it. Of even trying to learn a language, it just kill me. But I can learn. You know, I used to play sax years ago, and now it's just gonna be, let's get back into spending a little bit of time of learning musical instruments and stuff. So I suppose that's what you have to do.
Totally, man. Final question. It's usually where we end. If you could go back in time to an 18-year-old Ross, you had a couple of minutes of his time, what sort of things would you say to him?
What would I say to young Ross now? Easy. Don't fret. And I think that's the main thing. Things happen. And whatever it is will be and make you the man you're going to be. And even if it's the old analogy from Garth Brooks, unanswered prayers, those things that didn't happen or did happen will carve out the rest of it. So go with the punches and keep singing. I think that's it.
Ross, man, thanks for this. Really appreciate it.
Thanks ever so much, Matthew. It's been great. And honestly, you took too much information out of me as well, boy.
That's what happens in this room. I'm going to blame Daniel. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Cool.
Amazing stuff. Just want to give one final thanks to NI Connections for making today's episode possible. You can sign up for their free email newsletter at niconnections.com, where you'll get straight to your inbox interesting stories from people who are from this place but are living and working overseas. You'll also get some really interesting insider information about best practices of how to move back home or how to start a business here and all this other really, really interesting stuff. NIConnections.com is the place to do that. And we're so, so grateful that we're able to keep this series going thanks to NI Connections support. Have a great rest of your day. And thank you so much for checking out the podcast. Cheers.